Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everyone, welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Matt Straub, and today we're going to be breaking down the latest from NFL free agency and trying to spin it forward for real life and fantasy purposes. I'm joined by John Daigle, Pat Daugherty, and Danny Carter. Fellas, it is an exciting time of year for a lot of sports fans, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention that March Madness is getting underway pretty much simultaneously at the height of NFL free agency. Pat, first of all, I looked you right in the eye during that intro I was giving, and you were staring right at me, and that's why I almost broke up there. But I want to ask you, with so much going on, with these mountains of blurbs going on to the NBC Sports Edge site, are you able to enjoy the NCAA tournament and or life in general at this time of year with so much going on?
Well, I wish I was enjoying it right now. I mean, not to take people too much behind the curtain, it's Thursday afternoon. Usually the tournament's going on now. And so I was hoping, like, during this podcast, you know, I'd be like looking up at the TV a lot and, you know, feigning, oh yeah, John Brown, you know, huge addition for Saskatchewan, you know, big move in free agency here on the football show. That's good. I'm Patrick Daugherty. I love the NCAA tournament. All I'll say is don't take Mizzou. Just don't take Mizzou. We will let you down. We will let you down.
Daigle or Denny, either of you, Denny, you're an NCAA tournament guy?
I'm absolutely not. Are there games on today? What's going on? Are there
first four on first, Thursday? Those results, people Thursday. Already know that by the time they're listening to us, they'll know. But you know, the huge win for Niagara over Albany.
There have been games played now.
No,
tonight, Thursday night.
Thursday.
What the? Well, if people are listening, there'll have been games played. Play along, Denny.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm lost. Here's the thing. I remember back in the day, it would start Thursday afternoon. You know,
well, it still does. It's because of. So look, there's this thing you can search. It's called SARS-CoV-2, sometimes known as the coronavirus, and it because of like the coronavirus protocols, they basically started the tournament a day later to give teams like an extra day. To get, you know, an extra day to rig the tests. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Virus or no virus, everyone's scared to admit that college basketball is the worst sport to watch. Everyone just tries to fit in with their office and playing tournament pools, and I just have none of it. I don't watch. I don't play. It's not interesting at all. Every kid is taught to run fundamentals and run the 35-second shot clock down till the very end of the play and then jack a covered three every single play. It's just not a fun sport whatsoever, so no, I'm out.
You know it's bad because when they hit that three, the team goes crazy.
Absolutely.
Oh my God, we hit the three. Can you believe this? This is a game changer. Now we'll have 20 points before the half. You know, that's how you know it's bad.
Now, first off, the shot clock is 30 seconds now, guys.
Okay, I didn't even know that.
I will say my favorite part of the NCAA tournament, like a meme I have with like my home friends, the people I know, you know, the friends that I have that I don't talk about on the podcast because I have lots of, you know, these close personal friends. Now, the thing we like to meme about is the graphics where it's been like 9.5 minutes since last New Mexico State field goal. And that's a really great recurring NCAA tournament motif.
Man, what an optimistic sucker I am, though, because I did not see that coming from Daigle. But in retrospect, it just makes a lot of sense that Daigle would not be digging on the NCAA tournament at all.
I think it's – is it college basketball more of a Midwest and North thing?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, Mizzou is now in the SEC, and like when we were in the Big 12, like it was a huge deal. And in the SEC, they're just like, whatever. I mean, we'll buy a few recruits, you know, for a few of the signature schools and try to have them do good in the tournament, you know, good for PR. But yeah, they don't really care about it nearly as much. So Mizzou basketball has come down a notch in the SEC.
I get more excited about second wave special team signings and free agency.
Well, we have a whole bushel of special team signings to discuss today.
So many special team signings, by the way. So many.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we're going to be looking at some of the recent free agency related moves and headlines and what the impact might be. So let's start, why not, with the Washington football team, which notably has added Ryan Fitzpatrick and Curtis Samuel. Daigle, is it possible or even likely that this offense is going to be a plus for fantasy purposes in 2021?
It's an amazing pickup, and I find it interesting because both sides know it's simply a bridge to the team's next quarterback, whoever that may be, but it's an agreement that, hey, you were coming to an already built team, a team with a menacing front seven, as we know from last year, adding a high-ceiling cornerback like William Jackson to the mix, and then just trying to get the ball more into the air. It's a completely different change in philosophy as well, because no quarterback had a higher rate of his passes to the intermediate level of the field, so 10 to 19 yards from the line of scrimmage, than Fitzpatrick, whereas no quarterback had a higher rate of his passes behind the line of scrimmage in the league than Alex Smith. So just to push the ball downfield further with weapons in this offense, Logan Thomas, we know, an extremely athletic tight end who was running all the routes, just had no one to throw in the ball accurately. Of course, getting Terry McLaurin proven to beat all world corners already in just his 2 years in the league, and then now adding Curtis Samuel to the mix. It actually is a very exciting offense, and one that you can probably stack for cheap in best ball leagues throughout the entire summer.
I mean, something that about the Washington offense is, like, this was a team that was ninth in pass attempts last year. Like, Scott Turner had high volume passing attack in Carolina too. And that number is probably going to come down this year as, like, the defense matures and the running attack hopefully matures a little than Antonio Gibson. But yeah, this is, especially when you consider the division that Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be playing in, he's going to be a streamer extraordinaire again. And even without Curtis Samuel, it had a really intriguing big three of weapons with Scary Terry, Antonio Gibson, and as John said, Logan Thomas. And Fitz, you know, what he did last year was with kind of, I mean, the Dolphins, like, on paper at full health had a decent supporting cast, but it was very rarely at full health. Like, he was making that noise with a really kind of an undermanned skill group, and he's not going to have that in Washington. He's going to have weapons, and of course, Ryan Fitzpatrick is not going to be like a set-and-forget fantasy option. You know, he might not even finish the season as starter. We know how things go with Ryan Fitzpatrick. But with these weapons, with that play caller and this division, with like the Cowboys and Eagles defenses, Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be fantasy relevant in 2021.
Yeah, no, he will be like the streamer to start the season, barring like Washington, you know, taking one of the top quarterbacks in the draft. Of course, they would have to trade up. I will say that Curtis Samuel going back to the coach who clearly had no idea how to use him in Carolina is a little, you know, concerning. Go ahead, Pat.
No. I was just going to build off your point. Yeah. You finish your actual point first. I'm not that rude.
All right. Yeah, okay. I overestimated your rudeness. yeah. And you know, so that to me is a little bit off-putting, but perhaps seeing how Curtis Samuel was used last year, especially late in the season, it would be a tip-off to the current Washington staff about how he can, you know, most effectively be used as, you know, the presumed number two pass catcher in that offense. It's weird to say because, you know, been doing the fantasy thing for a while and I've never really been excited about the Washington offense in general, like as a thing, as a whole. But here we are and it seems kind of exciting.
It's not just last year too. Remember, North Turner was fired 2 years ago in the final month of the season with the Panthers and Scott Turner took over and Curtis Samuel got 9 carries in the final month of the year. They know how to use them. And most importantly, his skills don't overlap with Terry McLaurin. So you can see an outcome where both players are extremely useful in fantasy.
Yeah, Denny, that's where I almost interrupted you. I was going to jump in and say, like, that was my initial concern with Curtis Samuel is that, you know, didn't make a ton of noise under Scott Turner and Norv Turner in Carolina. But then, as John said, when I went back and looked at the stats again, it actually did. I kind of forgot how this began in 2019, where he did have 19 rushes. He actually had more targets in 2019 than he did in 2020. He had caught fewer balls, so he was highly inefficient. Or speaking to, they didn't quite know what to do with him. But it seemed like Scott was kind of getting an idea in 2019, and yet now – you would think they're savvy enough to find what worked for Joe Brady and combine what he already knows about Curtis Samuel with what worked last year, and that we can indeed build off of this Curtis Samuel breakout from last year.
I haven't checked his contract situation, but I feel like if he's under contract, this is just devastating news for 80-catch J.D. McKissic. Hope repeating his miracle 80-catch season next year.
I also think it's quietly a win for DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson, who are going to be coveted anyhow. But remember that Joe Brady already schemed this off successfully. I know they failed in the red zone, but not only do we think they'll upgrade a quarterback, but he's already schemed them against the league's toughest schedule last year. And so not only would their schedule just be easier because they already played the toughest one, but now it frees up targets for those two wide receivers in particular. So yeah, I think they're also winners where their ceilings can be much higher this year as well.
And Matt, just to answer your question, J.D. McKissic, I'm sure, is about to sign for a $5 million special teams contract with the Houston Texans. So
and instantly so become the best running back on the team, by the way.
Yeah, hope's alive is what you're saying.
Don't look at the Texans signings, by the way. It is.
Oh, it's bad.
It's very bad.
Well, there has been a lot happening in Las Vegas with the Raiders. Leading receiver Nelson Aguilar is gone. In comes John Brown. We've also seen a lot of turnover on that Raiders offensive line. Denny, what do you make of the chaos surrounding this Raiders offense right now?
It definitely seems like a team that knows what it's doing. You know, that I think we can always say that about John Gruden and the Raiders. Yeah, definitely no plan. You know, I think that's pretty clear. But, you know, fantasy-wise, the John Brown signing makes sense after losing Aguilar. I mean, the more I thought about it yesterday, the more I was able to convince myself, and maybe, you know, I'll get some pushback here, and that's fine. That's what we're here for, guys. But is John Brown not the automatic wide receiver one in that offense? I mean, you know, for as long as he can stay healthy, and that's always a big question with him. But who says that he just doesn't end the year like not dominating targets, but definitely leading in targets on the team? That's pretty — he could be a great value in that circumstance.
Yeah, it's not just Nelson Aguilar that they lost. They also lost Tyrell Williams was on the Raiders, right? Like, I'm saying that, like, I think —
did
he
you
was
imagine
on the
that?
Pretty sure he was on there. I'm pretty sure John Gruden gave him like $125 million.
Remember, he had that stretch 2 years ago where he scored like what, 5 weeks in a row, the opening five games.
That's right. So they had a deep threat dearth. I mean, that includes Henry Ruggs. So Josh is — but now that Josh is gone, I mean, the best thing about Josh being gone is we can finally trash Henry Ruggs. Just, you know, just the bad player, guys. Just the bad player. No. Just ahead of very, you know, so they don't know if Henry Ruggs can be that guy they want him to be down the field, the game breaker down the field. John Brown, stabilizing veteran presence, who is on the wrong side of 30, is still very effective when he stays healthy. But as we know, he kind of had stabilized his health in 2018-19, and the health issues came back in 2020. So it's kind of like he could be like whatever contributions you get out of John Brown are a bonus, but maybe that's taking it too far. But someone that John Gruden will know how to use. And yeah, like Denny said, I mean, Brian Edwards could get hyped again, I guess, but John Brown, there is a universe where he very easily ends up the most targeted Raiders wide receiver.
I think there's still potential for Henry Ruggs now that Aguilar's gone. I don't think Nelson Aguilar's an elite talent by any stretch of the imagination. 2 years ago, Philly was basically trying to give him away. They benched him. He was one of the worst receivers in the entire league. But he did have a legitimate rapport with Derek Carr, leading the team in air yards and end zone targets, was their primary downfield threat, and they lost it. They not only lost that, they're returning one of five starters on their offensive line, like an elite unit, not only on that team, but one of the best in the league last year. So all of these questions just beg me to wonder if like the Raiders offense is now one to avoid, because we don't really trust Josh Jacobs. We saw last year, he gets game scripted out of contest so easily. And now getting rid of your one option to go downfield, does this just result in Darren Waller getting pummeled with targets yet again? If so, that's fine. But I'm just slightly concerned about the offense as a whole.
No, absolutely. And I guess one positive thought to share about Henry Ruggs is, so even with the corona year last year, no offseason workouts, like no offseason install, that kind of thing, rookie wideouts did shockingly bad. But like that doesn't mean we have to like hold it against rookie wideouts, rookie skill players that didn't do shot. It was a really tough year to learn. John Gruden's offense actually is kind of complex. There are very valid, huge concerns with Henry Ruggs. But yeah, it's way too early to say after that one bad year for Henry Ruggs that it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think the takeaway here overall is what John said, which is that it's Darren Waller all day. Just a ridiculous number of targets coming his way.
It's only a one-year deal, too. Like, it's not even expensive for John Brown, so you wouldn't think he'd be a roadblocker at his age, and then you have Henry Ruggs, who you just drafted, number 12 overall, but then against the Raiders. So, like, it would make all the sense in the world that they don't prioritize Ruggs and just hammer John Brown with deep targets.
All right, we've been wondering for weeks how the Lions are going to mess up DeAndre Swift's outlook for next season. I think for a while we assumed that would just be like Adrian Peterson, but we finally have a clear answer here. That answer is Jamal Williams, who joins the Detroit backfield. Pat, putting any, you know, disappointment aside, if you're a DeAndre Swift person, what does this realistically mean for Williams and for Swift?
I don't know. To me, get even more confusing when they bring back Adrian Peterson yet again and like talk about him as the starting running back. I would say, so like the contract, you know, not big money at all. He was one of the first running backs to sign, though, so maybe that's like the money's not going to get better than that at running backs. It's hard to know, really, to read into this contract, because in like normal times, a year like the salary cap isn't falling, a year where we have a little better grip on how NFL teams are valuing running backs, like $7.5 million wouldn't be like, oh, like we're super concerned about the young stud money. But maybe in this offseason, that's really good running back money. And I would just say the main concern is probably near the goal line. Am I wrong, folks, Denny and John?
I don't think you're wrong. And I see, you know, Jamal Williams in the mainstream media, I'm kidding, on my Twitter timeline, being dismissed as not a factor. And I don't understand that at all. You know, I'm guessing that he wouldn't sign with Detroit if they had implied that it's just DeAndre Swift's backfield completely. So he will be involved. He took a lot of goal line opportunities, a lot of, you know, inside the 10-yard line opportunities away from Aaron Jones in Green Bay for the past two seasons. So who says that doesn't happen with Swift? Now, will Swift be used, you know, differently? They've talked about using him like Alvin Kamara in space, lots of, you know, targets, checkdowns, whatever. That would be great. I think that would be a way for him to be able to save his fantasy outlook and his fantasy production if Jamal Williams is a consistent part of the rushing game for Detroit. I guess the question that looms over all of this is, you know, will the Lions be in position to run the ball a whole lot in 2021? And my guess would be no.
It was already a concern for that reason, for this offense. Offense and a team overall, we think is tanking because they just don't have the right pieces in place logically. We look at it now and are skeptical of it. As long as Adrian Peterson stays away, though, there's still enough touches in this backfield for both Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift to be involved. It's going to come down to, yes, how much in the passing game will Jamal Williams play? because, and I'm poaching this idea from our friends at ETR, because Silva just summed it up best in the latest podcast. It's that Jamal Williams does all the things that coaches love. Like, they love his pass protection out there. They love the fact he has reliable hands. And so how much will he poach from DeAndre Swift in a bad offense? That is truly a question mark. I was already worried about Swift, despite being an extraordinary talent, just being stuck with Jared Goff alone. This certainly makes me a little more skeptical. Having said that, you know, when you get down to the low or high 20s range, low teens, that's probably where Swift is going to fall in line anyhow, just given the talent after that range is just nothing in comparison to him.
John, yeah, like Jamal Williams is like, he's a legitimate three down running back. He's not like he's like elite in any phase of that, but like he truly doesn't just do everything like coaches like. He just does everything a running back is supposed to do. So he's the kind of guy, yeah, who could get on the field in like a short yarded situation. Was to say then they get the first down or whatever, or it becomes a third down in a pass catching situation. He won't have to come off the field. Like that is the concern, where he could just like end up sticking on the field like even longer than they planned. But Dan Campbell is coming from New Orleans, so I guess we could see the Kamara Latavius Murray dynamic develop. Latavius Murray and Jamal Williams are like very different players, but Jamal Williams, as we said, can do anything a running back can do. And maybe he just will become like a Latavius Murray type, which is a very involved role, but isn't a crusher for the guy in front of him. But like you said, the offense, will they even be able to run the ball? So that probably is still the bigger concern than Jamal Williams.
Yeah, I mean, it feels a little bit like echoes of the Raiders conversation we were just having. Like, in theory, yeah, they should give Henry Ruggs more opportunities in year two, but the reality is it's probably going to be John Brown more. It's kind of the same thing where you don't really trust them to do the right thing, even with a new regime.
I think that looking at Jamal Williams and that signing and saying like, oh, is he like he's the backup? That's nice. That's wild to me. I saw that signing and I thought that's a problem. You know, that's a problem for DeAndre Swift, no matter what you think of him. You know, that's the thing. I think in fantasy, this is a larger conversation, but just because you think a guy stinks, you know, doesn't mean that the coaches feel that way. John just talked about how coaches love Jamal Williams. That's what matters. You know, that matters way more than your evaluation of him.
All right. Meanwhile, former Lion Marvin Jones is now joining the Jaguars, where we expect him to be catching passes from Trevor Lawrence next year. Marvin started out ridiculously slowly in 2020, had just 146 receiving yards total through his first five games. He finished, though, just shy of 1,000 yards with 9 touchdowns. What do you expect from him in Jacksonville, Daigle, and what do you think this means for DJ Chark?
Well, it obviously helps that he has the last 2 years of his career under Daryl Bevell, experienced in that scheme. And in that range, he's had 18 touchdowns the past two seasons, surprisingly, with 4 multi-TD week-winning performances sprinkled in. So he's shown a ceiling as well. Will only be 31 this year, I believe. And then I don't think, like Washington we talked about, I don't think the roles overlap in this offense. Like Laviska Shenault can be a game-breaker. He showed that at Colorado, but last year, even if this is a spread offense, last year he was more used closer to the line of scrimmage, allowed to try to gain yards after the catch once he had the ball in his hands. Whereas Marvin Jones, we know, is more of a deep threat, and DJ Chark has been used as a versatile boundary receiver that can catch the ball in all levels of the field. So I think in this, if they're running a spread offense like Urban Meyer caters to, like Daryl Bevell wants to do, just push the ball downfield, then yes, this is actually a terrific match and gives the Jaguars another deep threat alongside Shark.
You hit the most important takeaway, that he is going to be staying with the offensive coordinator is with. You know, last year, kind of like a shockingly productive year. I guess it did come amidst the Kenny Golladay hip mystery. I mean, the targets might not be as plentiful this year with the Jaguars. But I agree with everything you said, but he's not like as redundant of a talent to DJ Chark as you would assume at first blush. And he's just still one of the league's best role-playing deep threats. And he's not going to have weekly fantasy value, I don't think, but like he's going to be like one of those mix and match plug and play wide receiver threes, kind of like he has been in Detroit the past few years.
Are we still putting DJ Chark as the wide receiver one in that offense, even though Marvin Jones is there? Because I'm feeling like Marvin Jones is the kind of guy who comes in and just ruins that whole projection for Chark. I'm not saying, you know, a target dominator, but I do think that in that offense with Trevor Lawrence, I think Marvin Jones could be more useful than, you know, than a plug and play type guy, or I don't want to say streamer because you don't really stream wide receivers, but like a fringe fantasy guy. I don't know. I think, you know, with Bevel, with the team probably having to throw a lot, probably more than they would want this year. I like Marvin Jones as a late round, you know, guy in best ball. I liked him before he signed with Jackson, but I do want to say something about Marvin Jones claim that he wanted to sign with a Super Bowl contender. That's always bogus. And this is proven it once again.
Denny, Urban Meyer's won at every stop he's been. All right, come on. He took Utah to a BCS game. He's the guy's a winner.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I'm wrong.
Denny, we talked last week about how you've written about 35 Hunter Henry blurbs in recent weeks. He now has a new team, joins the Pats along with a bunch of other notable pickups, which you've already discussed. So looking mainly just at Henry here, what does his arrival mean for the New England passing game and for Jonnu Smith, who the Patriots have also added?
Yeah, I wrote about the Patriots offense in a column on Tuesday. You can check it out on the site, kind of summarizing free agent pickups from that day.
Let's save the plugs till the end, Denny.
You're right. Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Okay, we'll edit this out.
Yeah, okay, cut that.
So, you know, we didn't love, at least I didn't love Jonnu Smith's chances of seeing any kind of volume in that offense before the Henry signing, and after the Henry signing, it seems possibly even more bleak. And this is now assuming that we know the Patriots offense going into this year. Like, is Cam Newton really going to be their starter? Like, are they going to get super aggressive in the draft and pick up a quarterback? Are they going to completely overhaul their offense from last season? You know, and even if they do, are they going to be that much more pass heavy? And the answer, if Cam Newton, late career Cam Newton, is under center for you, the answer is no, you're not going to center your offense around throwing a bunch of passes with a guy who has, you know, struggled mightily. And I'm being kind, I think, through his past three seasons, pretty much three full seasons. So I think both Henry and Smith are outside the top 10 going into the season. I know Pat is going to just literally fire me after this for saying this about Smith, but I don't like it for either of them. I think the talk, this loose talk, I would say, about Gronk and Aaron Hernandez from 10, 12, 11 years ago is, you know, it's nonsense. They threw 611 passes that year. They're not going to do that this year.
Pat usually waits to fire you till the end of the show, but I'm not sure you're going to make it today, Denny. I'm worried about you.
Yeah, I do. I have admin privileges on Streamer. I might just remove him from the conversation. I'll say I liked the Jonnu signing more before the other signings, because I thought when it was just Jonnu on an island, you could justify easily, oh, they're going to funnel him targets to get him yards after the catch. So, like, Bill Belichick is on record talking about how dangerous he is after the catch. But yeah, as the week went on, the Jonnu outlook got more and more bleak. And he's somewhat, like, to his debt, I mean, he's a good blocker, so, like, maybe he's just going to have to, like, block a lot. And he is an established red zone threat now, and he is a dangerous, dangerous yak threat. So maybe he'll keep a bigger role than expected in the offense. But, yeah, it is a concern. The week got more concerning for Jonnu Smith as it went on. And I'll try to be succinct. All I'll say about the Patriots as a whole, it's like on an individual level, none of these signings obviously really move the needle. But like as a group, I mean, they've addressed like every failing they had with their passing attack last year. Nelson Agholor would have been their best deep threat. Kendrick Bourne would have been the inside, the backup option they really needed to Julian Edelman, who wasn't healthy, you know, most of the year. And Kendrick Bourne can also play outside. You know, a team that has liked to target tight ends in the past, just no tight end production to speak of whatsoever, and they had money to burn. None of the commitments are that long. Only Jonnu's even longer than 3 years. So I actually agree with the Patriots is this kind of crazy out of control spending.
It's so funny how they built their offense, because on defense they prioritize versatile guys. Matt Judon, whether they're in a 3-4 or 4-3, can be on the field. Devin Godchow, he just eats up space as a run stuffer. Henry Anderson had been terrific with the Jets prior to Greg Williams and Adam Gase's arrival. And we, of course, know how they play their defensive backs and safeties all over the place. Whereas on offense, they have guys who define themselves in singular roles, like Patrick said, Kendrick Bourne, who is basically a terrific red zone possession receiver. And so I think on the field, it's just amazing signings. Jonu and Hunter Henry together, it's incredible. Nelson Agholor is a deep threat. But overall, it's just the offense is not going to be the same, like Denny said, as the Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski days. And there are just too many mouths to feed now. So the one person who wins in this is Cam Newton or whomever the Patriots starter is, since he's paid like a backup. We don't know. But whoever that person is has all their weapons at their disposal.
And John, I'll just say a weird thing about the roster construction too, where like to me, these moves they're making them as if they're still gonna be like a run heavy offense. Like none of these guys are like, you know, game breaking, huge, like offensive talent. Like they didn't signal like an aerial commitment, but yet they let like two of their mauling interior linemen leave in free agency. So it's just, maybe they just trust that they can easily develop those kind of players.
This isn't fantasy, but it's such a good case study too, because they basically have said with these signings, they're giving themselves a 3-year window to win, because all of these guys are in their prime and are going to get another contract when they're 29, 30, 31 in their primes. And it won't be with the Patriots, because we know how they do business. So since the whole point of football is to win a championship, they're literally saying we are trying to win a championship the next 3 years. And then after that, we'll figure out something new. But it's a great case study. Also, I accidentally called you Patrick mid spiel because I just saw some news break and I kind of started stuttering. Denny, let's start with you. What if I told you that Kenyon Drake is now going to the Raiders on a 2-year, $11 million contract? What are your rapid reactions?
This is rapid reaction. Listen, John, Patrick, it's a disaster for Josh Jacobs. I mean, it's not good is what I would say. It's also not good for Kenyon Drake fantasy wise. No. This is bad. This is all together very, very bad. I don't understand. Like I said, the Raiders
have a plan.
There's no.
Well, I was going to say this really bad for us too now, because this costs us 20 off-season blurbs where we can't say the Raiders coaching staff claims Josh Jacobs is going to catch more passes this season.
No,
because now it'll just be Kenyon Drake, even though Kenyon Drake's a terrible pass catcher apparently. Now, by the way,
I'm not going to have to read 11 Athletic articles about Josh Jacobs catching passes in training camp. I'm not going to have to do that because that's possibly not happening. Wow, this is something, John. What is your initial reaction?
You two summed up the Raiders side of it well.
Right.
And we need to get the Chase Edmonds blurbs ready. This is the news we were waiting for. And I know last year he got one spot start without Kenyon Drake and he performed bad. But remember, he handled 28 of 30 backfield touches in that game. And right now on the roster, it's the same guys who were active in those games. Eno Benjamin and Jonathan Ward behind him. And if that's the case, or if they simply add a day 2, day 3 guy, then we're not worried at all. It's still Chase Edmonds season. So that's what I'm gearing up for.
Yeah, wait till Adrian Peterson goes back to Arizona, though.
Stop, Matt.
I'm saying it won't happen.
You're fired.
All right, I'm gone.
Terrible.
We can't exactly fire you because Josh Norris just got hired by Underdog, so we don't have a host to back you up just yet.
Right.
Having said that, don't say things like that.
Okay, if you find someone, just let me know and I'll leave.
Congrats to Josh, too, by the way.
Congrats, yeah. Big Dog. I've never called him Big Dog before. Congrats, Big Dog.
It's like Patrick just called him the Big Dog.
We have finally reached the potential intersection of two incredible things, and I'm talking about primetime Andy Dalton and presumably a slew of Bears Island games. Dalton is taking over as the QB in Chicago. Pat, our latest blurb calls this an upgrade for the Bears offense, which seems true, but what do you make of Andy Dalton, Chicago Bear, and the fallout that ensues?
It is true, and it is sad. And yes, Bears, Andy Dalton, Island Games, that's like in danger of like creating a black hole that like sucks the universe in on itself. Like that is going to be bleak and dangerous. And you know, Andy Dalton, props to Andy Dalton, because like he played this perfectly. He got the 1-year deal with the Cowboys, actually parlayed it into more money and another starting opportunity. He did that with one of the most elite loaded supporting casts you will ever see on offense, and that is not what he had in 2019 with Cincinnati, when it was clear like that situation needed to end, like everyone needed to move on, and Andy Dalton would be better as a backup quarterback. And now he's back as a starter with an offense that is very low on weapons, an offense that apparently might be trading Anthony Miller, and an offense that could add more weapons in the draft. But Yeah, this is going to be pain, I think. And Andy Dalton, so it's not doom for Allen Robinson. Andy Dalton provided years of huge fantasy seasons for Allen Robinson, or for AJ Green, excuse me, in Cincinnati. So it can be done. But, I mean, this is – you talk about a holding pattern. You talk about a stopgap. Like, the Bears need to think bigger. And, I mean, they were in a tough spot. They don't have a good draft slot for a quarterback this year. But this is, like, holding pattern defined.
I do think that Andy Dalton is a significant upgrade for over Trubisky, you know, for purposes of worrying about or thinking about Allen Robinson's fantasy potential for this year. I mean, it seems like Allen Robinson really hates the team, hates the front office, and just generally doesn't like being there. So
he hates the people, hates the Midwest, hates the Great Lakes.
They're terrible pizza. Oh boy, I'm going to have Chicago pizza Twitter at my doorstep. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, fantasy wise, I think it could be worse is what I'm saying. I'm trying to see the positive here. I don't know why, but I am inclined to do that here with Andy Dalton. He could be a streamer. You never know. You don't know. You know, he could be, you know, 16 team league. You need a spot starter. There's Andy Dalton. There you go.
It's a joke. the Bears are such a joke, and everyone who supports this move thinking, oh, the Bears brought in veteran leadership, this makes sense, and they cite Andy Dalton leading the Bengals to the playoffs. Like, that was the 2015 season. We're 6 years removed from Andy Dalton being relevant. Like, we have to stop convincing ourselves that he's going to have a 34-year-old breakout at this stage of his career. Last year we saw that, and I understand the team fell apart around him, so he had nothing that he could even pick up but scraps, but he couldn't do that. He cannot do that at this stage of his career. But what do you think he's getting into in Chicago? Like, he's being forced onto a team where he has to lead, and he can't do that. It needs to be a situation like the Steelers, let's say, which all the pieces are already in place around him, from defense to the offensive line to weapons. Chicago is not that destination, so it's just going to be, in my opinion, another very poor season. And Allen Robinson, let's just hope for the best yet again in his career.
Wow. That was like the March Madness all over again, where we were all feeling kind of optimistic, and Daigle just gave us a harsh reality check.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't say I was feeling optimistic. John, you got to give the Bears credit. You know, you're trashing them for signing a veteran stopgap. It had been an entire year since they had tried that. A terrible joke.
They have not signed a tight end in free agency yet. I'll give them that credit.
There you go.
Just keeping note here before we move on, Denny has both gotten fired and angered Chicago Pizza Twitter today, which is tough. I'm scared what the third thing is going to be.
To be fair to Diddy, like, it is not pizza, first of all, but also it is a spot. Like, when you get Luminaldi's or Giordano's, like, you know what you're getting. Sometimes you need that savory, heavy feeling. Everything can be taken with a grain of salt, Denny. You don't have to say you hate everything.
Are you just saying to put salt on it? Is that, I mean, or are you saying I haven't had a good Chicago pizza? Because that's what I'm always told.
Someone who eats a meat mountain every day, I think you could get behind a pizza slice the size of a meat mountain.
You have more than enough salt from roast beef going in your belly right now.
That's right. I got the COVID vaccine today, and they asked if I had had a meat mountain recently.
I had to lie.
They wouldn't have, you know, let me get it otherwise.
I thought actually having a meat mountain would be a pre-existing condition that would qualify you for a COVID.
I had a meat mountain, and I smoked 100 cigarettes, you know, in hopes that it would push me up to the front of the line.
They got you a wheelchair and like rolled you to like a special section of the pharmacy after that.
That's right.
Okay, just a quick reminder that our premium product subscriptions at NBC Sports Edge cover all sports, so you can still get access to NBA, NHL, college basketball, and MLB premium products with the Baseball Draft Guide now available for 10% off any subscription. Enter the promo code GOOD10. That is GOOD10 for 10% off.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
All right, a few more free agent headlines to hit here, and we'll go to Denver now, where it appears that the Philip Lindsay era is over. The Broncos rescinded his tender. He's a free agent. I believe the Broncos also have added former Viking Mike Boone to the backfield, if I'm not mistaken. Daigle, what's the fallout here for this Denver backfield?
Philip Lindsay, for whatever reason, was just never valued properly in Denver. It seems like ever since his rookie year, they've been looking for someone else to share a percentage of their backfield touches. Only Ryan Grant, Arian Foster, and Willie Parker have more rushing yards, undrafted free agents, in their first three seasons than Philip Lindsay. And he rushed, as we know, in his two healthy seasons to start his career for over 1,000 yards in both of those with a Pro Bowl appearance. He needs to go, obviously, to a team that needs a pure running back. I think New England, honestly, would be such a good fit for him. Just someone they can give carries to and not worry about how he's used as a receiver out of the backfield, because that's been his whole weakness in the league. But he's still a tremendous player that I think can provide value elsewhere.
I'd say Lindsay's problem in Denver was that he is a good player, but there was no one area where he had the advantage on Melvin Gordon. Mm-hmm. And maybe they just thought that, you know, as a 5'8", a smaller back, he wouldn't hold up. But I mean, it's very baffling treatment of someone who was a huge bargain, a huge find for them, a very important player. Their treatment of him seems like it could have been better.
Didn't Philip Lindsay have some catches in his first year in the league?
He got the ball. I just wasn't very efficient with it. He wasn't explosive, really.
Had a few drops as well. And even though he did catch the ball in college as well, it's weird how they used him and Royce Freeman over the years.
Right. I feel like it's not outside of his skill set to be an every down back. He's definitely not going to get that opportunity off the bat for whoever he signs with, but I think that sort of upside for Philip Lindsay remains, depending on injuries to other backs and in whatever backfield he signs with. As a zero RB dude, I am very interested to see where Philip Lindsay lands.
What about Mike Boone and the Denver backfield, in your opinion?
I think another zero RB.
I was going to say, Denny has already put him in his queue in every draft he's going to do this year.
100%. Yeah. I mean, Boone probably won't provide weekly value or you won't be able to, use him on a weekly basis, but he seems like a guy who could see a ton of usage if Melvin Gordon gets dinged up.
So yeah, it's behind a guy who gets hurt almost every year. So Mike Boone is immediately in the conversation.
Melvin Gordon's the one where I don't know where to sit just yet, and I'll have to by the time I publish the best ball tiers. But he finished 14th in fantasy points per game. But a lot of that production, if you go to his December game logs, three of four of the worst defenses in the league he played against, and despite averaging fewer than 18 carries per game, averaged over 6 yards per carry. So he was just, as a player who has not really been efficient on the ground for his career, he was overly efficient in December, and that's something we know doesn't really carry over. And so that's my concern, that everyone's going to tout him for all the touches, but maybe it's just best to avoid him since he'll go at too high of an ADP and instead go to Mike Boone in the late rounds.
There you go.
Well, a couple of notable moves not directly involving any skill players, but most likely impacting them is the Niners with their offensive line. They re-signed Trent Williams to a big deal, also added Alex Mack. Denny, what does this say about Kyle Shanahan's plans and the Niners' plans for next season?
I mean, I think it shows that they want to continue to establish, no matter what happens with their quarterback situation. I mean, it looks like Garoppolo right now. I know that Deshaun Watson has said reportedly that he wouldn't mind being traded to the Niners, but you're going to want whoever is taking the majority of carries in that Niners backfield. Now, what will the price point be? What will the ADP be? I'm not
quite sure yet. But, you know, Jeff Wilson comes to mind as someone who I will be targeting. He won't be the starter to start the year. Obviously, that's Mostert. But, you know, I'll go with that. I will, you know, stash anyone who has even a small chance to start behind that offensive line and in that offense.
I mean, moves were probably just a prelude. Like, they had to keep Trent Williams. Like, he was immediately amazing for them last year. What they gave up, like, that was, like, the linchpin of their offseason. And then they needed them. They didn't have a great center situation. So improving the pivot will help for an offense that's going to have to remain run-based with Jimmy Garoppolo. And I feel like this situation is a prelude, though, because this backfield is not a finished product right now. And there's so many bargain running backs out there. And, you know, Kyle Shanahan seems like the kind of guy who'd like to draft a running back almost every year. So we don't know what the finished situation is going to be in the 49ers backfield.
The world is welcome for that 3 a.m. blurb as I was still up binging the new Last Chance U episode.
Pat, when you guys recorded the Money podcast, I think you just missed out on the Jets signing one, Corey Davis. I know you were devastated that you didn't get to get that in on your Monday episode. So here is your chance now. Coming off a season of 984 yards, 5 touchdowns, can Corey Davis stay fantasy relevant as a New York Jet?
I mean, just everything about this move kind of like screams like Daniel Snyder circa 2010, like overpaying a number one receiver. But the thing is, they didn't really pay that much. They had cap space to burn. They have one of the thinnest receiver cores. And from a fantasy perspective, I mean, without Deshaun Watson coming to New York, it's hard to see how Corey Davis kind of keeps the momentum going. But, I mean, I don't know, former top five pick who it was in, like, top five in the league in yards after catch last season. Maybe that was just a product of how the Titans offense is designed and run. But it was a very impressive season opposite someone, you know, who's like a world beater in A.J. Brown. And the question, of course, is can Corey Davis function without someone like that? And the answer, you know, the first 3 years of his career was no, was a disappointment. And it would, maybe if the Jets can get a bargain in Kenny Galladay, maybe if they add one of the alphas in the draft, this starts to look better for Corey Davis. It's not a bad move for the Jets because they had the money to spend and they had the need. But in terms of fantasy right now, I will not be getting Corey Davis best ball shares or you know, that kind of thing.
Correct. I don't think it's a great situation to be in. Having said that, it all comes down to Sam Darnold removed from Adam Gase. Is he going to become the Sam Darnold of his rookie year where he flashed such high upside, particularly outside the pocket, or is his confidence completely shot and thus he's no longer even an NFL product and maybe just a career backup for the rest of his career? So I have no idea what's going to happen, but I don't think the volume overall, especially as they continue to talk to more receivers like Juju Smith-Schuster, is really that exciting.
Wide receivers typically don't produce all that well when they switch teams. And it just, if you look at the past 10 or 15 seasons in fantasy. So you have that going against Corey Davis. You also have Denzel Mims, who is still a thing. And, you know, it depends on what happens with Jamison Crowder, but I just don't see where the opportunity is going to come from for Corey Davis.
A couple other receiver-related moves, specifically old receivers changing cities. The Bills have added Emmanuel Sanders to their wide receiver room. We've been talking in recent weeks about the potential for Gabriel Davis in Buffalo next season without John Brown. So now Sanders comes to town. How much of a dent, if any, does this put in Davis's fantasy appeal for you, Daigle?
None. I think that Sanders is basically going to be Gabriel Davis of last year, where he's only used for injuries and four wide receiver packages. We've talked about this in the past. Gabriel Davis ran a pass route on 289 of 298 dropbacks in the 7 games that John Brown missed or was injured. And that's not going to change. Like, or that's going to happen. Gabriel Davis will enter as a starting wide receiver, and Emmanuel Sanders will play sparingly off the bench minus injury. So I am still high on Davis over Sanders, much higher, and I hope we get a value on him, honestly, if people covet Sanders.
I think Emmanuel will still play, but I mean, they did a lot of four receiver sets. And Gabriel Davis, someone they were hyping before the season even began last year, and then they forced the issue with him. So yeah, I'm totally comfortable still being aboard the Gabriel Davis hype train.
Right. Emmanuel Sanders circa 2014-15 would be a different scenario, I think. But they obviously have a commitment to see Gabriel Davis's role grow in that offense. The one you know, caution, I think, with Gabriel Davis is that absurd touchdown rate he had last year and his insane usage in the red zone. But, you know, those things can be countered by more snaps, more pass routes, more targets. So
one more aging but notable wide receiver piece of news. 32-year-old A.J. Green is headed to Arizona, where he'll be catching passes from Kyler Murray. He played in all 16 games last season, but mustered just 523 yards and two touchdowns. Danny, does A.J. Green have enough left to capitalize on what in theory should be an upgrade?
I mean, players really do go to the desert to retire. Like, it's true. You know, I mean, A.J. Green is 32 going on 47. You know, it seems like, no, I think this is a terrible move. And I know I'm not alone, obviously. I don't really see why you would spend this kind of money. And it wasn't an absurd amount of money, I don't think, but
$8 million, I think.
Yeah. Why you would spend any money on a guy who, it's not like he didn't get opportunity last year. I mean, at one point he was dominating air yards in the entire league. Like, he had more air yards than everybody at one point last year by a long shot. And he still wasn't producing. You know, sometimes a guy is washed, and that's what we have here with Green.
I mean, just neither option is good. Either he's washed, or like he had the Cincinnati flu last year and like wasn't trying and was trying to force his way out of town, which isn't a good thing either. And like, so the best case scenario is basically that there's like another gear that he wasn't getting last year that he's going to suddenly rediscover this year. And it, you know, doesn't really make sense as a theory.
We are not network reporters, thus we are not obligated to say AJ Green is a good signing. What it does do, though, is continue, or it keeps DeAndre Hopkins as likely a top five wideout and target hog, because we're not trusting AJ Green or the other options. Hopkins, of course, had the second highest target share in the league last year, finished second only to Stephon Diggs and raw targets. So what we're going to see is Hopkins and Green on the boundary, and then we push Christian Kirk to the slot, which does make him interesting, because for his entire career in Arizona, he's been used improperly. He's been used incorrectly. He was so much of a different player at Texas A&M, and so I hope he's used more as a explosive receiver than the guy they just do pop shots to down the field. But overall, we also know this offense is extremely volatile and has question marks since they couldn't change anything last year, even when defenses knew how to play them. So it's still the same. The path is still the same. It's Chase Edmonds, Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, perhaps Christian Kirk, and that's where it ends.
If the Cardinals were going to spend this money on receiver, why did they not? They needed to add an explosive element to their offense, and why this was the decision, I don't think any of us know.
Also, rest in peace, Andy Isabella truthers.
Sorry. Seriously.
Now that we have that out of the way, let's get to these special team signings. Daigle, you want to break down your top 25 for us?
Danny, is the special teams article coming?
I do. I have a breakdown of all the long snapper releases that we saw. And then, you know, the former Baltimore long snapper signing with Tennessee, whose name I can't come up. Morgan Cox, of course, Morgan Cox. So, yeah, that's coming. You just watch out for it.
All right. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen. Who would like to finally promote something at the right time of the show to promote it?
Dennis.
Anyone?
Me? I'm sure I'm going to be doing free agency stuff in the next couple of days. That's what I can promote.
We're going to make him a mule. Yeah. Denny, just do all the free agency content, please.
Sure.
Next week is best ball week. Next week. Not only tiers, but also the streams start. I was told to hold till next Friday. So next week.
There we go.
Get ready for that on the site.
All right. Daigle, Denny, Pat, thanks, guys. Thanks, all of you, for listening. We will see you next week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.